The world's greatest feats of engineering have been performed by brainless insects and spiders. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts about wisdom of the wild. Hello, this is Joe Cruz and the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. You know, friends, as skepticism increases in the religious world, more and more demand is being made for proof concerning the existence of God. Now, once upon a time, that question was never raised. But even theologians now are unsettled today about this basic issue. I contend that open-minded men of sincere hearts will find no lack of evidence to prove that God exists. It's certainly strange that the most obvious evidences are usually overlooked entirely. The naturalist, who constantly surveys the miracle design in God's handiwork, is seldom unconscious of an intelligent creator. The overwhelming supply of intricate order and design, altogether beyond the ability of any human to provide, convinces the unprejudiced scientist that God made it all. Our little world abounds in proof of the existence of God. To illustrate, there are laws which determine the weather, the climate, and the seasons. Inexorable law reigns in plant and animal life, in chemistry and physics. There are laws governing light, color, and sound. Design and symmetry are discernible in every flower, leaf, and blade of grass. Take, for example, the corn on the cob. Did you know that its longitudinal rows are always even in number, either 8, 10, 12, or 14, etc.? You will never find an ear of corn having an odd number of rows of corn. Now, inanimate nature can't count, friends. Who, then, could have planned such an arrangement, if not the mind of the intelligent and infinite God? And then consider the tiny snow crystals with their graceful whorls and the delicately chiseled and beveled edges that decorate them. And then their curious dots and loops, all arranged in perfect order about one center. Now, how in the world can anybody explain the fact that snowflakes are almost always hexagon in shape, either six-sided or six-rayed? Professor Wilson A. Bentley, an authority on snowflakes and pioneer of snow crystal photography, photographed at least 5,000 flakes and never found two that were exactly alike. 5,000 snowflakes, each with a different design. But what are 5,000 snowflakes among the countless snow crystals which blanket numberless fields and tops of mountain ranges and then feed the glacial rivers? Artists and silk designers use these snow crystal photographs for patterns. Jewelers use them for gem cutting and for designing jewelry and filigree work. And workers in art metal use them for making the decorative ornamental work, such as tracery and windows. Scientists use them to study the weather and the clouds and the snow. Lovers of beauty revel in their symmetrical and fragile loveliness. When he was asked for an explanation of the transcendent beauty of those crystals, Wilson Bentley answered, "Only the artist who designed and fashioned them knows how it's done." And friends, the very existence of such a law of design proves that there's a super-intelligent artist-creator behind the miracle of snowflakes. We don't even know any human designer who could produce the myriad fragile art patterns that those flakes reveal. Does anybody have the faith to believe that blind chance could produce something superior to all of man's intelligence? But now let's think of another example of design and order. The wise man counsels, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise." Proverbs 6, verse 6. Now who can explain the wonders of animal behavior? Nobody knows. Who endowed the ant with the superior wisdom that makes it the world's first mining engineer? Who made it possible for the humble water spider to be the world's first hydraulic engineer? The water spider builds its nest underwater, fastening it to a rock or a log or stick, with the opening to the nest pointing downward. Now, in order to force the water out of this thimble-sized nest, the spider brings tiny air bubbles into it, and it repeats this operation until all the water's been forced out of the nest and it's ready for the laying of its eggs. Now, who taught the spider that the air would displace the water out of its nest? How was the spider able to discern this scientific fact thousands of years before Archimedes even discovered it? The shell spider is the world's first civil engineer. It lifts a shell, possibly 100 times its own weight, to a branch about 18 inches above the ground. and how it performs this feat of engineering is indeed a marvel of marvels. It first turns the shell downward in order to drain out the water that might be in it, and then it spins a web from the shell to the branch of a tree. The web shrinks as it dries, and it thus lifts the shell a little closer toward the branch. And so the spider spins another web, and still another, and each strand dries and lifts that shell just a little bit closer until the shell is hoisted and fastened to that branch. Bees are the world's first sanitary engineers. When a mouse enters the hive, the bees will actually sting that mouse to death. And inasmuch as bees are vegetarians, they don't feed on the carcass of the mouse, but in order to prevent the decaying corpse from contaminating the rest of the beehive, they seal it airtight with a special wax. And so perfectly is the work done that not the slightest taint of decay or the faintest odor can seep through it. Now, who taught these bees and gave them this marvelous wisdom? Oh, well, friends, the same God who bids his children today, "Be ye clean." Man has within himself a fully equipped world's fair, far exceeding the wonders of any other world's fair. If the living human body could be magnified a million times, what mysterious processes we'd behold that would stagger the imagination? We're told that the tissues of our bodies are composed of 28 billion cells, and that each cell and tissue requires food for metabolism. Does man consciously contribute anything to the accomplishment of this stupendous process, friends? Not in the slightest degree. All that man does is partake of food and chew it, masticate it. The stomach, the intestines, the liver, the nerves, the heart, the blood, the lymph, they do the rest. The blood delivers the nourishment to each of these billions and billions of cells, and the body does the rest, forming the bones and the nerves and the muscles. Well, it's fascinating to observe how quickly the body counteracts disease when some kind of a disturbance occurs. An alarm is immediately sent out from the nerve center in the brain, at once setting in motion new activities in the body in its effort to overcome the difficulty. Swarms of white cells are quickly manufactured in the marrow of the bones, and these cells go forth to prevent any further intrusion of the invading germ. Restorative forces are at work, and healing has begun. Now, from whence does the body obtain this power to repair itself, friends? In the words of the Scripture, "Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Or who hath given understanding to the heart?" Job 38, verse 36. One great professor of clinical medicine at Harvard Medical School, in an address to the Massachusetts Medical Society, enumerated many of the mysterious functions and processes of the body which no scientist understands or even can explain. "But what is nature?" he asked. "What are the characteristics of this power? Where do we get the healing substance in our tissues? I do not see why we should call it by its natural name. It is perfectly obvious that it is God. It is the power of God upon which each one here depends today for the fact that he's here instead of being underneath the earth. The medical profession has learned in studying disease more about the meaning of this word God than the vast majority of the so-called religious people. Why not tell this truth? Because it is true." Well, that was the words of this doctor, friends. Now let's look at the human eye for a moment. It's a marvelous photographic camera, constantly sending picture messages to the brain. The ear is a supersensitized sound apparatus, capable of recognizing a familiar voice among a thousand. And what might not be said of the nervous system, with its millions of tiny nerve endings and shoots reaching into every part of the body and carrying messages to the central station, the brain? Who's able to solve the mysteries of the human mind, of man's personality and destiny? Is it any wonder the inspired psalmist exclaimed, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made," Psalms 139:14. Now, since God bestowed so much thought in the creation of man, is it reasonable to suppose that he will neglect to care for him? Are you at times tempted to think that God doesn't really care, friends, or that maybe he's forgotten you? Listen to what he would say concerning this. "Can a woman forget her sucking child that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee." Isaiah 49, verse 15. Now there was a time when this scriptural account of the creation of man was sneered and scoffed at by skeptics and regarded as preposterous and unscientific. Well, of course, it's still laughed at by the skeptics. But they called the creation story a myth which had come down to us from the ancient peoples of the East. But listen, friends, when chemical analysis tested out the Genesis account in the test tube of the laboratory, they found it to be scientifically sound. Modern scientists agree that the human body is composed of precisely the same elements as the dust of the ground. And that's what the Bible says. Now, how in the world would those ancient pagan philosophers know that the body was made up of the same elements that are found in the dust of the earth? They had no way to test those things like we do today. And so the Bible could not have gotten its information from those pagan sources at all. It had to come from some inspired source. Now, further proof that man was created from dust is demonstrated by the fact that in order to live, man must partake of food that comes from the dust of the ground. The inorganic elements of the earth are transformed in the body by the power of God into organic elements, which sustain and maintain the life of man. Let man cease to partake of these elements of the earth, and he'll soon weaken and die. And therefore we can see that the same forces at work in man today that brought him into existence was there in the beginning by the creative power of God. So the creation story stands vindicated, friends, on many, many different counts. Now, according to the Scriptures, man's ancestry is not linked with a monkey or the amoeba or monad or any other little one-celled animal, but with God. It was the Creator who fashioned man from the same elements which even the scientists acknowledge are found in the dust of the earth. It was his Maker who imbued man with a mind capable of thought and affection and worship. Who can explain the mysteries of man's soul and personality aside from the Bible record and the creation story found in the book of Genesis? Who gave man a brain, a stomach, a nervous system, and the many organs which function with such marvelous coordination? And the only logical answer to that, friends, is simply that God did. He is the Maker of these things. And it seems so illogical that these doubters and skeptics could look at these marvelous parts of the body. They look at that eye, for example, that's like the most complex camera that's ever been invented, much more so, can automatically focus for any distance and then take a picture and send the messages back through those millions of nerve cells back to the brain so that the brain gets the impression of actually seeing those things when it's not the eye at all. The eye doesn't see anything. It's a brain. After it receives the messages and unscrambles those messages, it begins to perceive what was actually in front of the individual. But all of that comes through the miracle of these beautifully balanced and complex organs of the body. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.